Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays. You're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like? Because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora. He's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Tom, a very special day. Unpack your knives. We have the Dean. We have the Grand Poobah. We have Tom Colicchio.
3 years in the making. I never thought this day would come. We've tried many times. We have swung and we have missed. But today we landed Tom Colicchio, who we learned, Kevin, is a big basketball fan.
This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haberstroh.
We're joined right now by someone who needs no introduction to fans of Top Chef and fans of this podcast, Tom Colicchio. This is a conversation we've been chasing for 3 years since we started this podcast. Tom, how are you?
I'm okay, you know, all things considered. My restaurants are all closed. The strange thing about it is I'm busier than I've ever been. So I'm not sure how that happened, but... But I'm okay.
Yeah. I really enjoy your conversation with Terry Gross at what is a precarious and kind of really a heartbreaking time for the restaurant and food service world. And one of the things that struck me was that, you know, it's not that we lack food supply in this country. We lack an effective food supply chain. And it's something you've been talking about, food policy, for years. And so in your view, if you were the food god with unilateral power, what should the American food supply chain look like in 5 years?
Well, in 5 years, I think what I would do is use the laws that are already on the books to break up some of these large food processors. They become monopolies at this point, and some of the practices are really predatory in terms of pricing, in terms of the way they treat farmers, and so I think that would be the first thing, is use some of the antitrust laws that are already on the books. You don't need to create new laws, and just break them up and spread everything out. You know, right now we have 800 meat processors in this country, right? 50 of them process 90% of the meat that we eat.
Oh.
So what are the other 750 doing? Well, what they are is there's 25 different licenses that go out to food meat processors, and the big guys make sure that there's very little that they can do. And so when you have these small regional farms, like I have a house out on the North Fork on Long Island, and there are people that are growing chicken and pigs and lamb, and they have to send their animals to Connecticut to get slaughtered. There are no small regional slaughterhouses near Long Island. There is one, but it was run by Cornell for the prison system. It was run by inmates, but it was only for the prison system. And so there are no, and even then, there's no small facilities where, let's just say you're raising animals and you can actually, you know, kill the lamb or pigs, but you can't actually break them into pieces. And so you have to sell them whole. So there's 25 different licenses that can be given out. And I think that those restrictions need to be eased up a little bit. We need more small regional slaughterhouses and processors. And what that does is it spreads the production out. And so our production is more resilient. You know, in San Diego, one Smithfield plant closed down, and they process 5% of all the pork in this country. And you know, I would make it where no one factory can produce more than, you know, 3 or 4%. And then what that will do is actually will create jobs in rural America, because you'll spread those plants out a little bit. And then I think, you know, the pandemic is really clearly, you know, lifting the veil on how fragile our system is. But I think in order to make it more resilient, number one, needs to be spread out. You know, maybe we're not going to get hit with another pandemic anytime soon, but we're certainly going to get hit with big storms, you know, due to the climate changing. And we don't want one particular area to get, you know, if they get hit hard with the storm and shuts things down, it creates disruption. So I think that's number one. That's something that we can do. I would like to see more regional farms that can sell directly into cafeterias, school cafeterias. Mm. And again, this is all about processing, because you have farms, especially in the Northeast, that produce most of their food in the summer when school sessions are out. And if they sell into the school system, most of the cafeterias aren't cooking and prepping food anymore. They're just reheating it. And so if you had a processor sort of in between that could take that food regionally, process it, get it into the school system, what that does, farmers, it creates markets for those farmers, additional markets, so they can actually you know, increase the amount of food they produce and actually get better pricing and actually have a market. You know, right now, if you're a small farmer, you sell at your farm stand, maybe you could sell at a farmer's market, you sell direct to restaurants. Maybe there's some regional supermarkets that may buy some of your produce, but it just expands markets for farmers and actually helps some of the smaller farmers. Yeah. And then, you know, one thing that needs to happen is we need to spend a little more money on research and development on increasing yields for what is known that the USDA labeled specialty crops, otherwise known as fruits and vegetables. Right now, all that ag research goes into corn and soy. And so we created a hell of a lot of corn and soy on fewer acres, but we haven't spent that money in research and development into stuff that we actually eat. And so what that would do, if we can produce more on the same acreage, we can actually produce more nutritious foods, not corn and soy that mostly goes for ethanol and feeding animals. We could feed people more nutritious food if we had more. And then, again, regional distribution would help too. Fresh product is hard to move around. So that's some of the things that I would do. I would definitely, we have a problem in this country where nutrition is expensive, but calories are cheap. And so people who are struggling to feed their families, they have to rely on cheap food, dense in calories, not a lot of nutrition. And so often you see obesity in families that are living in poverty for that reason. And so that needs to be changed. We need to get more nutritious food to people who can't necessarily afford it, which would mean a more robust SNAP system or food stamp program. And keep in mind that most people who receive SNAP are from working families. SNAP also, the majority of it is elderly, people with disabilities, vets with disabilities, and children. And so I would do that. And I would also make sure that the school lunch program has much more nutritious food and that it's free for all. Right now, the three-tiered system, we should get rid of that and make lunch free for all. So
amen.
Those are some things I would do if I were the food czar.
Food God, yes. Tom, there are not many silver linings in this pandemic in the restaurant industry or in the entertainment industry, sports industry. Here in Charlotte, there are no Charlotte Hornets games going on. There's no sports going on. What we do have is Top Chef. And so there is a little bit of silver lining that Top Chef is happening right now. And that's for many fans, sports. And that's kind of what we looked at with this podcast was, hey, we're sports writers. We kind of analyze Top Chef like it's a sport. Why don't we just start a podcast? And one of the questions that Kevin and I have wondered for years, how did Top Chef start? Every great thing had to evolve from an idea that someone brought to you back in 2005. How did Tom Colicchio get involved with a thing called Top Chef?
Yeah, number one, I wish it were my idea. If it wasn't. I received a phone call from a producer, Shona Minoprio, who was our first executive producer, just out of the blue. And they said they were working on a show and they thought I'd be great for it. And I declined. At the time, there was another food reality show out there. And I promised the chef I wouldn't mention it ever. But there was another food reality show out there. And I certainly didn't want to make a reality show about me. And so at first I was like, nah, I'm not really interested. And then they called back again. They said, well, I think you should take a look at it. And we produced Project Runway and they also did Project Greenlight, which I actually was a big fan of, if you remember that.
Yes.
Gulagar, remember Gulagar from Project Greenlight. So I watched that over a couple of days. My wife and I binged on Project Runway. All right, this is pretty cool. And they said, it's going to be a food show like this. And so they asked me to do a screen test and come to LA. I said, no. And they said, well, can we send someone with a camcorder just to get you on tape? Like, fine. They came to the restaurant and that. They called again and said, can you come out for a screen test? I told them no, but there was a documentary done on the opening of Kraft. And so I sent them that. And then they called and said, we want to make an offer. And so at that point, it was serious. And, I thought about it and I agreed to do it. And it was one of the better decisions I've made in my life.
Why does the show work?
How does it work?
But no, why does it work? It works incredibly well. Like, this is a really good show, and that's for a reason.
Yeah, I think that, it was a combination of being the right place at the right time. I think so many people are interested in food now. They want to know who the chefs are that are making their food. They want to see new technique. They want to know about new ingredients and stuff. So I think that's there. And then for the reality junkies, there's a ton of reality there as well. And so it's a two punch combination. I'll throw the sports metaphor in there. And so it really works. I think it checks a lot of boxes for people. The other reason I think it works is because and this was something from day one that I insisted upon. I want real chefs in there. I want chefs that can really hold their own.
Yeah.
And like first season, we had a few home amateur chefs, and they couldn't hang. And then I think second season, they wanted the student there, and they went on about this is the best student we've ever had at Culinary Institute. And I was like, fine. The guy lasted one episode. And so if you look at more than any other reality competition show out there, I don't think that any other show has graduated as many contestants into the real world of whatever industry they're in. I mean, if you look, there's probably 150 chefs who competed in Top Chef that are winning awards. They have multiple restaurants, and they're doing the work. It's not, you know, we're not casting, you know, people who are outrageous just to make reality TV. These are real chefs. And I think that's why it's successful. You're seeing the real deal. And so I think that's part of it.
Did you know that you were going to be good on TV? Like your eye roll is the stuff of legend. Like when you did Top Chef reveal any idiosyncrasies that you didn't know that you had? And did you have to develop a poker face when you're eating a dish not to give too much away?
You know, it's funny. The producers, they claim I have a tell. The contestants don't know it, but the producers do.
We got to figure this out. You have a tell?
I don't know it. I certainly don't. They won't tell me, but they say they think, and they're not always right. But no, I think
the eye roll is classic.
Yeah, that's a practice thing from when I was probably a kid. But no, I you know my thing here. I know a lot of actors, and I'm not an actor. I never, you know, so I don't try to be anything but myself on the show. Nothing is scripted, with the exception of sometimes when we introduce a challenge or something, but judge's table, there's nothing scripted. Even that delivery that I give right before we cut the person, that's off the top of my head. I mean, I think about it in the time between.
Oh, some of your puns are fantastic. As a father, they're great.
Well, the dad, well, yeah, that happens. That's just natural. I mean, you know, the dad puns are there. You know? but no, I'm not trying to act. I'm trying to be myself. I'm not trying to be outrageous. I'm not trying to, you know, get some zingers in and one-liners in there. And so but no, I had no idea that I had done some TV before this, but mostly like, you know, Today Show and things like that. But I didn't know. In fact, you know, the joke in my family is I was probably the least likely person to be on TV.
I know everyone loves all their children equally, but do you have a favorite season?
Season, I think it was five, whatever season Las Vegas season was. That was also the season that we won our Emmy. I thought because it was the deepest bench that we had, you know, you had five people who could easily have won that season.
That's the Voltaggio season you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Kevin was in that season too.
And that was Murderer's Row. Season. I mean, that was
amazing. Yeah, there were a lot of good chefs there. And I mean, there was some serious stuff. That was the first season where the chefs were cooking on a level and I was just like kind of stunned. I was like, man, there's just great stuff happening here. And I remember the one particular episode, it was funny because the producers thought it was the most boring episode in the world. And it's the episode that we won our Emmy on. All these French chefs were in Joe Robichon's restaurant and our chefs blew them away. And it was just great to watch these you know, mountains of our industry, these French chefs, Joel Robichon, and I'm forgetting who else was there, but there were some really big names just completely like blown away. And it happens again, this finale, some of the same things happened, but with Italian chefs who were some big deal chefs, and they were, you know, and actually chefs from all over the world in our finale who were just floored. So that's always great to see because, you know, these chefs, you know, if they hear the show, they're thinking like, well, you know, these chefs, what do they know? And they come in and they're just like, wow, these guys can cook. This is the real deal. And, you know, to me, that's really important because the one thing that I wanted from the show, somebody asked me early on, and I said, I just want respect from the industry that we're doing something that is worthwhile and we're standing up the industry and we're not, you know, some joke that people are just going to go, that's not real. And so that was it. That did it for me.
We want to do this thing where we ask you open-ended questions, sort of quick, brief questions. We should have a name for this. Maybe we'll call it Quick Fire Challenge.
Good name.
So starting, you can eat at only one restaurant for the rest of your life, which?
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, little, hey, boy, how you doing? And Noodles is like, whatever.
which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust.
Rose!
And I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Squirrel in Los Angeles.
Really? That's that's an 8-minute drive for me.
I love it. It's, you know, it's the food. I mean, Jessica's fantastic, but it's the food that I want to eat every day. You know, yes. And also, like, I can't sit for 4 hours, you know, eating 20 courses. I lose interest after a while. It goes nuts. I do it because there's just really cool, interesting things out there that I want to see. But boy, that crispy rice salad with the sorrel.
The preserves are amazing. Like, I eat them.
I have two jars in my refrigerator. breakfast. In fact, I got to post an Instagram post. But no, it's I just love it there. It's got a great vibe, and what I love about Squirrel is it knows who it is. Jessica knows exactly what that restaurant should be, and just executes it. And there's just a vibe in there, and it's really cool, and the food's fantastic.
Tom, after you ride your success as the food god, you're going to become the president of the United States, and I want to know who is your White House chef.
That's pretty funny. I have no idea. You know, that's a funny position, that White House chef, because, you know, I've seen the kitchen in the White House. It's small. And these steak dinners that they do are pretty big. I don't know how they pull it off. I was in the running for a couple of them. They always kind of, you know, push me aside. But
Wait. Really?
Yeah. I was supposed to do, anyway, long story, but anyway. You know, it's very political who gets in, who doesn't get in. Yeah. But that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I got to get back to you on that one. I really don't know.
We'll circle back.
Tom, your least favorite food trend or restaurant trend?
Microgreens, swooshes on plates. You know, that stuff's got to go. Enough of the swooshes, enough of the microgreens. Time to put that to bed.
Okay. Guest judge, who's number one on your wish list? The number one draft pick for Tom Colicchio on guest judge that hasn't been on top.
Hasn't been. That's...
Has or has? Hasn't or has? Doesn't matter.
Either?
No, hasn't. Hasn't. Absolutely.
Okay. Guest judge that hasn't been on. I mean, so many people have been on.
A stumper.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Guest judge that hasn't been.
He's kind of humble bragging right now, Kevin. Because we've had so many
everybody
on the show.
No.
I'm trying to think of like who hasn't been that would be cool to have on. Because I mean, I don't know if John George Vondrick can ever have done it. You know, I'm not sure if he's done it.
All right.
He may have been in an episode. I don't think he was a judge. But let me think for a second. Alice Waters. She won't do it, but Alice Waters would be great.
Berkeley. Yeah. All right. Because we're shameless, we have a pitch for you for a challenge, and here it goes. Tomorrow, you'll be feeding a press room full of hungry sports writers. And sports writers are interesting eaters. They tend to like meat and potatoes food, but they're also well-traveled. And we want to avoid anything messy or anything that would put us into a food coma when it's time to write furiously on deadline at 11:30 p.m. So this is something, this is our holy grail, Tom. This is like we're the press room, the schlubby media press room challenge. And so just, you can file that away.
Too much barbecue sauce gets on the keyboard. Can't have that. What do you think?
There are parameters.
But what's the challenge? That's not a challenge.
To make a sports writer dish.
Here's the thing, Tom, we eat in press rooms. Do you know what they feed us? It is like
what I'm hearing in my ear right now is if I go to my producers and say, hey, how about this? Let's say, okay, but what's the challenge?
Food that is all right. We'll find this and we'll come back to it. We have one last question, and this has come up in our little Twitter and Instagram question, and I'm pretty knowledgeable about gay culture for obvious reasons, but like, what is the deal with your icon status among gay men? Have you delved into this? Have you inquired?
No. I'm comfortable with my sexuality but if gay men like me, that's great. I love that. I love them too. I love all people. I don't know.
Well, you said on this season when you were up at the mountain getaway for the moms that this is your fan base. And so I was like, wait a minute, the mom fan base? I don't know. The the whole AI icon status is rivals the mom fan base.
It's good to have all kinds of fans. And then, you know, I'm an equal opportunity fan lover. So
you have a broad coalition.
I dig it. It's fine. It's cool.
Okay. Last question. Your last supper on death row. What is it?
You're not going to be on death row, Tom. Give us the full
compliments here.
It's not what you think it's going to be.
Okay.
You know, I could very easily say, you know, if you really wanted to plan this out, you can choose like 20 restaurants around the world and fly from place to place. That would kind of stretch it out if you could do that. But no, so every Sunday growing up, we had macaroni and gravy. It wasn't pasta and it wasn't sauce. It was gravy. Now, in New Jersey, as an Italian-American, you have meatballs and sausage. Your mother fries meatballs and sausage. This is Sunday morning, brojo, and that all goes into the marinara sauce. And once that meat goes into the sauce, it becomes a gravy. Because by definition, a gravy is a sauce with meat drippings. So we throw our meat drippings in there. And then that is simmered, and then it's you know, served over pasta. We called it macaroni, though, not pasta. And that would be it. That was every Sunday. There was always some sort of salad. It was also a meal that you had around 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. It wasn't a dinner, more supper. And that is the meal that I want to go out on.
Well, we wish we had another 2 hours with you, Tom, but you do have to go. We're really enjoying the season. All-Stars, some of the familiar faces, some of your best work this season. And we'd love to have you on again. And we need to work, Kevin. We need to work on our pitch for the...
I know. All right. This is constructive criticism. I'm on it.
So thanks so much, Tom.
What's the challenge? You know, where is number one? Where's the setting? So this is important. If it's a sport event, what sporting event is it? Is it like...
An NBA game.
Finals? Is the NBA finals? It's you got to like, you know...
The All-Star game.
NBA All-Star game. All right, that's so. Now you got to like kind of ramp it up, and there has to be another hook. I mean, like, we did in Kentucky, right? At Rupp.
Yes, of course. Right? Now,
there's a hook there. There's something going on there.
Yeah, of course. Sarah had a rough one that one.
No, but Eric's drumlets were classic. We talked about those drumlets with him on this.
Do you guys remember more? I have no idea what was cooked. I have any of this. All I remember was it was really cool being in Rupp. My brother's a high school basketball coach, and I was like sending him pictures, like, you know, like, check this out. It was really cool. And they actually took the floor when they won the championship in Florida. They had that floor, and that was the floor in the locker room. It was really, really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
My wife is a huge UK fan, so that is the best Top Chef episode.
I'm a UNC fan, but I do like Calipari.
Wow. So much we need to talk about, Tom. Oh, yeah. So much. But we have Kevin.
I'll tell you why. See, I'll give you a little reason why. So I always was a UNC fan. But back, God, it had to be almost 30 years ago, I was dating a woman. Her name was Elizabeth Kearns. Her father was Tommy Kearns. Tommy Kearns won national championship with North Carolina in 1957. Okay. Actually very famous because that was a triple overtime game. They beat Kansas. And they had Will Chamberlain play for Kansas. Tommy was 6 foot on a good day, and they let him jump center against Will Chamberlain as a guard. They knew they weren't going to win the top. So that was really cool. They went in triple overtime. So anyway, later on in life, he introduced me to Dean Smith. And Dean and I had this nice little relationship. Dean loved food, and he loved to come to New York. And so whenever he came to New York, he would eat my restaurant. He would always leave me tickets. And I always had great tickets. And so... I forget what season was it. When did they win the national championship?
82. Against Georgetown?
No, Michigan.
93. Timeout.
When Chris Webber.
The timeout. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that season, at UNC was playing in the Garden. They were playing against Notre Dame, and so I got tickets, and they were up on the second tier. I didn't mind. I was just loving the game. They actually lost too. And so a couple days later, I got a handwritten letter from Coach Smith saying, I looked up and I saw where you were sitting and I was mortified. I'm so sorry. And you had better seats. And I wrote a letter back saying, like, please, like, don't apologize for those seats. But, you know, you could have won the game. But also I was like shocked that this guy actually knew where I was sitting. He's coaching a game. He actually like anyway, so
that's amazing.
So anyway, so they win the national championship, and I sent them a congratulatory note. And I'm not someone who writes notes, but I sent them a note and I said, you know, Coach, congratulations on an amazing season. This more than makes up for those shitty seats you gave me.
Nah.
Which was really funny. There you go.
That is me. That is me with Coach Smith.
Very good. Really, that's cool. But I got it. He was one guy when I had Gramercy Tavern, he came in for lunch one day. And we've had, you know, actors and movie stars and rock guys, and there are all kinds of people in there. More people stood up and applauded Dean Smith, and he walked in that restaurant and walked over and shook his hand. But he was really gracious. He was just a great, great guy. And I got to say, I also love what he did helping to integrate
the ACC.
Young black men into you know, Baton Rouge. If he was traveling, he insisted they stayed where he was staying. So he did so much for basketball behind the scenes that most people don't realize. And he was just a great guy. And I'm always to this day a huge Carolina fan.
Tom, I will have you know that when I went to college in New York from Georgia, the two kind of first real restaurants I ate at were like my senior year of 95 at Gramercy Tavern and a little Italian place on 18th Street called Da Umberto.
Sure.
Those are like the two real first experiences I had as like a real diner.
Cool. Guys, I got to jump off because I got to get on another call with Mike Tirico now. So they're buzzing me up right now, and I think they're going to think I'm blowing them off.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having us.
Anytime.
Or having you.
Wow. Yeah. Carolina fan. Who knew?